I welcome everyone to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. If the holiday season makes you merry and bright or sad and filled with gloom, you are welcome here. Whether you celebrate Hanukkah, Christmas, the coming solstice, none of these, or some wondrous mix of images and themes that support you, you are welcome here. Whether you love parties, tolerate, or abhor them, may you find in this community the connections that help bring you into your fullness of being human, the inspiration to find something in each person worthy of respect, and to lift up your voice in praise for the many random acts of kindness everywhere when you allow tenderness to fill your heart. May this be a place where an open and inquiring mind has the full complement of a receptive and sharing heart. May we help one another recall the wonder that is in every single moment. May we celebrate that possibility this morning with one another, doing what we can to bring peace into our lives and to encourage a reverence for all of life, each strand of the interconnected web of existence of which we are all a part. May this be a morning of celebration of life in its splendid complexity and the simple joy of just being. May we freely share the innate goodness of our Unitarian Universalist faith that helps us to save lives in the world of the here and now. Welcome to this great morning.
When I was asked to light this morning's chalice with a few words about lifting up your voice, I'll be honest. I did what most people expect someone from my generation to do. I Googled it. After looking around for a while, I came upon a quote from Malala Yousafzai. Just 2 years older than myself, a few days ago, she became the youngest person to ever receive the Nobel Peace Prize. I raise up my voice, not so that I can shout, but so that those without a voice can be heard. Thank you.
So let us rise and lift up our voices and sing the opening carol, O Come, Emmanuel, number 225. In this season when many of us are really busy, it's important to take the time to recall those things which bring joy into your lives and to recall those things which may bring sadness, the loss of a loved one. We are a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would please now share a brief personal joy or sorrow or a wonderful mix.
I lost a tooth.
Is that a joy or a sorrow? A joy, okay.
Ann Cowan, I have a sorrow, but sort of a joy, in that Gerald Hanna died this week. And he was a friend of many people here, I think, but he was a very faithful member of our Coalition on Immigration Reform and Helping Undocumented People here in town. So it's a sadness that he will not be with us for that anymore.
Hi, Sarah Lott. I have a joy that somewhat recently I joined the Flint Hills Harmony Sweet Adeline's Chorus, and we'll be singing with the Little Apple Men's Barbershop Chorus later today at McCain at 3 o'clock. So I hope to see some of you there.
May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts.
For unknown reasons, the opening piece did not make it into the program. It was by Giovanni Gastoldi, who died 400 years ago, and been translated from Italian to English. This piece is by a French composer, Charpentier, and he died 300 years ago. So the words are fairly simple: Sanctus, holy, 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 for the first part, and then the second part, Hosanna, begins Pleni sunt cieli et terra. Full our earth and our heaven and earth with Gloria, your Gloria, Hosanna in excelsis, and then a little trio in the middle: Benedictus qui venit in nomine Domini. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, Hosanna in excelsis.
Oh,
good? Can everyone hear me? All right, good. You can hear me. Good. Well, that's who I'm telling the story. Well, for everybody, really. So let me see. Can I see you all? All right. Well, good morning. And I want to tell you a story called The House at the End of the Road. Do you know, have you ever been in snow when it's just snowing so thickly that you feel like you're in a dream? It's slow motion right in. If you open up your tongue, the snowflakes go on your tongue and they melt and you feel like you're so pure and so clear. Annie and Nora one day were playing outside in the snow like that. It was just coming down so dreamily that they just felt like they were in some magic place, right? And then they thought, oh, well, I guess we should make a snow woman, right? So they got their gloves all on and they rolled a big snowball, and it was bigger than a beach ball. You know how big a beach ball is? Bigger than a beach ball. And then they rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled another one that was bigger than a basketball. And they had to help each other very carefully to get it up. Boom! And it fell apart. So they had to roll and roll and roll and roll again. And this time they were even more careful. And they got that ball bigger than a basketball on the first big ball, right? And then they made a ball a little bigger than our heads. And they put it on top of that one. And then they thought, what will we use for eyes? Oh, yeah, we know where the squirrel hides all the walnuts. So they went and got some walnuts and they put them right there. And boom, she had dark brown, beautiful eyes. And they said, what about a nose? Oh, how about that good stick from the walnut tree. So they stuck it in, and they had two things, and it looked like nostrils. And they go, wow, we're doing good. We're real Van Goghs. And then they thought, what are we going to do for lips? And then Nora thought, oh, I know. You know where the road ends and it becomes a dirt road and the woods begin? There are those really bright red berries. They will make the most beautiful lips you have ever seen. And so Nora and Annie say, yeah, let's go get them, let's go get them. So they closed the gate and they started running, and there's a chicken saying, I want to go. And Annie said, no, can't do that. And Panda wanted to come. So Annie said, come on, Panda. She got her out the gate. And Nora said, don't you think you should have her on a leash? Aren't you supposed to? It's snowing. It's so beautiful. She's not going to get hurt. So they ran to the end of the road where it became dirt and the woods started to rise. And they saw those beautiful coral berry bush berries. And they picked them. And then all of a sudden, Panda took off. She went right through the woods, down the road, and Annie and Nora just chased after Panda, calling, Panda, Panda. And Panda just wouldn't stop. She had her nose onto something. And then she went under a gate. And Annie just started to climb, and Nora says, get down, you're not supposed to go in there. You know, my mom said, it's very dangerous in there. You should not go in there. Annie thought, well, no, I have to. Panda's my best friend. And so she jumped over the gate, and she ran after Panda, calling, Panda, Panda, come, Panda. And then all of a sudden, there was this big, dark water, and ice was forming over the top. And Panda was at the edge of a big pond, and she was barking and barking and barking. She was so focused on whatever was in there. I think it was a muskrat. And she wanted that muskrat more than anything in the world. And she was going to have that muskrat. So she all of a sudden took off over on the water where the ice was forming. And the ice was just strong enough to hold her for 2 feet. And then, boom, Panda disappeared. Panda was gone. Annie freaked. She goes, "Panda! Panda, where are you? Panda, my baby!" And then Panda was up there. Her head came up above the water, and she was like this. And then she started to put her claw and her paw on the ice. And every time she started to get a grip, the ice would break. And then she would do this, paddling, trying to get her hold on the ice so she could get to Annie. And boom, she was just going down, and she was starting to shiver. You could see the dog shiver and shake. And Annie said, "Oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to save my best friend?" So she started to put her boot on the ice, and it went, it didn't sound good. So she took it off. And then she said, "What am I going to do without Panda?" So she put her boot back on the ice, and she put her boot back on the ice. And then all of a sudden, some big arms swooped her up and said, "Little girl, you should not be doing that. Who are you?" "I'm Terrence Langston Jones," he said. And Annie said, "My dog, my dog." She said, "Don't worry, we'll get her out." And under a big boat, he grabbed a big net with a long handle, and he went to the edge of the water, and he pushed that out there, and he scooped Panda up, and he tossed her on the shore, and he grabbed Panda and held her in her arms, and she was shaking, and Panda was shaking. And Mr. Jones said, "Come with me." And he said, "I don't know if I should." "It's okay, honey. It's all right. You can come with me." She had never been in a black person's house before. So they went around to the back. They took their boots off on the porch. And in the kitchen, there was this big black stove. And he said, "You sit next to the stove." And it was really warm. And he opened a door, and there was fire inside the stove. And he put some more wood in. He said, "You sit there and warm up. I'm going to go get some towels and blankets." He ran and got some towels and blankets, and he rubbed Panda really, really well. He said, "We've got to make sure she doesn't get hypothermia, which means her blood gets colder and colder, and she dies. So we got to get her warm. We got to make her warm." So they got her really, really warm. And then Mr. Jones says, "Would you like some hot chocolate?" Annie looked around. She goes, "I don't see any microwave in here. How are you going to make hot chocolate?" And Mr. Jones said, "I make the best chocolate, the very best hot chocolate." And so he got a pan out and poured the milk in, and he put it on the stove, and then he got something out of the refrigerator, a big jar of black velvet. And he spooned it into the steaming milk, and he stirred it and stirred it, and he got two big cups out, and he brought one to Annie. "Oh, my gosh," she said, "that smells like heaven." He said, "Wait until you taste it." And so he said, "Be careful, it's hot." So she blew on it, and she took a sip, and she goes, "Oh, oh, that is so good." And so they started talking, and she goes, "Why do you live here all by yourself with no one else, and no one wants to talk to you?" She goes, Mr. Jones says, "Honey, that's a long and old story. Right now, we want to make sure Panda is safe and good. Let's check on her." And there she was. She had stopped shaking. And then Annie goes, "Oh, my God, we forgot to call my mom. She's going to be worried sick." And as soon as she said that, they could hear sirens racing down the road, coming through the gate. And they were pounding at the door. Someone was pounding and pounding. And they said, "Mr. Jones, open the door or we will break it down." Mr. Jones opened the door. He said, "There is absolutely no need for that." He said, "Where is Annie?" And Annie came in. "I'm right here," And then Annie's mom and dad came in. Are you all right, honey? Are you all right? Annie said, I have never been better in my life. And then she said, we have to get out of here. And Annie said, no, that would not be polite. I think, Mr. Jones, you should offer them some hot chocolate. So he made some more hot chocolate, and the police and Annie's parents sat around and got to know each other. It was a great snowy evening. Thank you.
Oh, time and bomb, oh, time and bomb, bring first and God.
Now is a favorite time in our monthly cycle of offerings, our Helping Hands Sunday. Today we have Emily Wagner here, who is director of Manhattan Emergency Shelter.
Thank you for having me. I've been told you have a full program, so I need to speak slowly, but hurry. So I will try to be very quick. Instead of telling you about the shelter, what I've been asked to tell you about is some of the families that we have at the shelter. It's my understanding you guys have adopted two families through our Adopt an Ornament program, and we appreciate that. We have lots of families still needing adopted. So if you feel the need to come and grab another ornament, we would love for you to do that. But I want to just talk to you about one of the families and kind of give you an understanding of some of the people that we see at the shelter, because I think homelessness, sometimes you see it on TV and you see it in the movies, and it's not always what we have here in Manhattan, Kansas. So one of the families, I believe, the mother was hurt or injured in a domestic violence situation a few years back. And for that, she receives disability. She has three children, and the father of her children is incarcerated. And so she has been trying to make it on her disability payment. She's unable to work, and that had worked for a few years until she just could no longer keep up with her rent. She ended up coming to the shelter, and we decided right away that this was not going to be a situation that was easily fixable. She's not going to be able to afford rent right now in Manhattan on what her income is. And so we have a program called Permanent Supportive Housing. And that's just one of the programs we have at the shelter, but we pay someone's rent. We rent and lease places in Manhattan, and we place really hard cases in those units. And we decided that would be a perfect place for her and her three children. And so right now she is housed in one of those units, and we provide case management, and we're doing lots of things. The kids are in counseling, the mom's in counseling, the kids are in school, all three are school-aged now, and doing well. And we're working with her to try to figure out how to supplement her income so that she can then be able to afford things on her own, because that is her goal. You know, people don't want to be in the shelter. They don't want to live off the system and the support. And so that is our first goal, is to figure out a way to make that happen for them and how we can get them to that point. So I think my 3 minutes are probably close to up, but please feel free. I always have an open door. It's nice to see some faces that I recognize in here. If you ever have questions about the shelter or what we do or the people we serve, call me, come and talk to me. My door is always open. I've worked for the shelter for 14 years, so I have lots of stories and lots of experience I can give you. Yes, ma'am. In addition to money, you know, one of the things that we really need, probably even more important than money, is cleaning supplies and toilet paper and paper towels. We're not allowed to use dish rags and rags at the shelter due to our lodging license. I guess it breeds germs, I'm not sure. So we have to use lots and lots of paper towels. All of our clients have chores. Every day a client is assigned a chore, and so we do lots of cleaning. So all of those household items that you use in your own household, we use 100 times faster and could use those donations, because anything that's donated, any of those products donated, is less money that we have to spend on those things, and we can put that money directly towards clients. Thank you for your time this morning.
Now let us stand as you're able and sing another carol, the First Noel, 237.
Thank you.
Here's a poem that I read a month ago on Poetry Daily for any of you who might have a small but increasing interest in poetry. It's a great site because they really publish a poem that's accessible each day, a very good poem, an often very thought-provoking poem or a funny poem. So it's a great place to check out. This poem is called Origin Blues, an Elegy, and it's by Elliot Cahill Wilson. I come from the leaning jack and the shattered rib, the blasting cap and the phantom thumb. I come from the chorus sway of pine, the boat ramp baptisms, and the great black skillet of relentless June. I come from a long line of blighted cotton, squinting through years of just plowing sand. I come from the robbing land, the great pyramids of fire ants, the tar paper, the tin can shingles. I come from the coffee and Chesterfield dawn. I come from the tender-mouthed crappie and the warmouth perch, afraid of bankers, afraid of police car spotlights. Skis turning green and packs of wild dogs, skies turning green and packs of wild dogs in the corn at night. And I believe that they say about my blood, a tick's grip, mule resolute, hacksaw spined, over time on the foundry's knockout line. The bottom dog, the oyster man, fighting the tide through every night the tide gathers its things and leaves. So, old man, grandfather, dead of 40 years, I know too well what hangs in our tool shed souls. Not in the ground only are you your spavined bones. Not in the ground only is the white rind of your skull. I come from the barbed wire pasture and the horse's punctured throat. I come from the water oak. I come from the beached blue crab cornered by gulls. My not going back and you're not leaving. Exactly the same. I come from rented land. Though you planted clear to the kitchen door, through though the furrows match the whorls of your thumb. And I will tell you the most of my memory of you now that you live in the mirrors of your kin. 5 years old, and I stood on your shoulders, up through the green light of the burdened trees, to reach the hidden sunset peaches. You held my calves on the side of your head, held me fast. And though the wasps on the ground stung you and stung you, you would not let me fall. So may we have people in our lives that hold us above all that wants to sting and bite and rip our goodwill apart, that will hold the best of us up, the very best of us up, so that we have the opportunity to taste the absolute glory of a sun-ripened peach in the evening as the sun is setting. May we have that right. And may we share that with others. So grandparents, aunts and uncles, moms and dads, friends of children, hold them up. Hold them up so they can be strong and taste the goodness of life. Now I'd like to share with you, if I can find it, oh, here it is, a letter from the new president of Starr King School for Religious Leadership, the seminary I attended from 1981 to 1984, a place that grounded me in a sense of I could not argue my way out of being a good person. No matter how bad I tried to tell them I was, they said, no, we're not buying it. So this is a great institution that helps people develop a clear and clean and ongoing sense of how to find the goodness in life regardless of what's happening. Rosemary Bray McNett, a former editor of the New York Times Book Review, became a Unitarian minister in 1991 and served the Fourth Unitarian Universalist Church of New York City until being called as the first African-American president of a Unitarian Universalist seminary. And she sent this letter out this week. Dear ones, as I write, it is a Sunday night before another week of travel, and I wanted to be in touch in these days of deep and holy unrest. Events in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York City have been much on my mind and heart, as I know they have been for so many of you. I have been so consumed with rage and grief and fear that words that until now, words have failed me. It's not easy to be a leader of this school and to write these words. I wish my position as seminary president could protect me, my husband, and my two young adult sons. I wish my educational attainment or books that I've written might render me immune from fear. I wish my husband's tenderness, my older son's musical brilliance, or my younger son's humor could protect them as they go about the business of living black, two of them in cities far from my watchful eyes. I wish my brother in Boston and my brother in Chicago and my nephews in downstate Illinois and Denver could lead their lives with a certain casual indifference to their surroundings. I wish that the work and the struggle and deaths and lives of generations of people before me had come to mean something more than it means at this moment. I am still a black woman in America, and all the men I love and mention here are black men in America. And all of us, are expendable at any time. And that is the truth of our lives. And though I always believed I could write my way through anything, this sense of horror I have been carrying for these last several days has so overwhelmed me that only in the last 24 hours have I been able to catch my breath. What has helped me to breathe back life into me have been the pictures and the videos of people in the streets, my sisters and brothers who are black and those who are not black, but who know this isn't also their fight. What is breathing hope into my heart are the scholars and the researchers who are investigating everything from the neurobiology of racism to the interventions that surface surface white privilege so that people who care enough can begin to change themselves. What is making me proud is knowing how many of you reading this have been marching and writing and advocating and preaching and demanding a different world than the one we are living in right now. Sometimes, when some of us are so disheartened or discouraged for speech, we need to see the faithfulness of others to remain ourselves and to regain our voice. In these heartbreaking days, there may yet be a turning point. I thank God for the Star King community into which I have been called. Thank you for your outrage and your fierce love of justice. Thank you for your insight into the unrest that you have seen and for your commitment to peace in spite of justified anger. Thank you for your Facebook postings and your organizing and your vigil keeping. Thank you for holding a space large enough to believe that, though the struggle continues, it is forever worthwhile. Faithfully, Rosemary. There's so much in our lives that we take for granted. Please, let us not take for granted the gift of this free and progressive faith that calls on each of us to lift our voice up to injustice and to do what we can to stop it in our own small or large ways. It doesn't make a difference, but we need to support this faith. Give it our best. Help others regain their voices when they have lost the ability to speak their truth. We do it through Helping Hands Sundays. We do it through so many ways and individually. I know all of you are doing many things and giving to many projects, but it is so important not to let this place be hovering on the horizon. It needs to be rising bright and strong and able to correct these injustices so people can walk safely in the streets of our country. This is not a game. It's a glorious, glorious project, a process. It's about being fully human and lifting our voices up today and song and hearing great music restores us so that we can go out into the world and love it and do good work. So let this music fill you with its wonder and its beauty and let it help you move on. Keep on moving on. Glory be. Nothing like jingle bells. Let us now stand as you are able, and let us sing our closing carol, number 55, Dark of Winter. Be seated. I share these closing words by Theodore Parker, who is directly related to the name of this road out here, Zinedale Road, but I won't go into that, but just a little teaser for UU history. Be ours a religion which like sunshine goes everywhere, its temple all space, its shrine the good heart, its creed all truth, its ritual works of love, its profession of faith, divine living.